Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, the sacrifice performed by Daksha, text number 11. Bhavastavaya kritatir.
Bhavastavaya kritatir.
Nasaknut anuragataha.
Nasaknut anuragataha.
Udkantyad bashpakalaya.
Udkantyad bashpakalaya.
Samparetam sutam smaran. Bhavastavaya.
Bhavastavaya.
For praying to Lord Shiva.
For praying to Lord Shiva.
Kritadhi.
Kritadhi.
Although decided.
Although decided.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Asaknut.
Asaknut.
Was able.
Was able.
Anuragata.
Anuragata.
By feeling.
Udkantyat,
because of eagerness.
Because of eagerness.
Bashpakalaya,
Bashpakalaya,
with tears in the eyes.
With tears in the eyes.
Samparetam,
Samparetam,
dead.
Dead.
Sutam,
Sutam,
daughter.
Daughter.
Smaran,
Smaran,
remembering.
Remembering.
King Daksha wanted to offer prayers to Lord Shiva, but as he remembered the ill-fated death of his daughter Sati, his eyes filled with tears, and in bereavement, his voice choked up and he could not say anything. Text 12. Krishat samstab yachamanaha prema vishvalita sudhi shasamsa nivyo dikena bhavanesham prajapati. At this time, King Daksha, afflicted by love and affection, was very much awakened to his real senses. With great endeavor, he pacified his mind, checked his feelings, and with pure consciousness began to offer prayers to Lord Shiva. Daksha uvacha bhuyana nugraha aho bhavata krito me dandastvaya mayi britto yadapi pralabdaha na brahma bandushu chavam bhagavan avagya Tobyam Hares Chakuta Eva Drita Vrateshu. King Daksha said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offence against you, but you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favour by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me who am engaged in performing sacrifices?" Purport. Although Daksha felt defeated, he knew that his punishment was simply the great mercy of Lord Shiva. He remembered that Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are never neglectful of the brahmanas, even though the brahmanas are sometimes unqualified. According to Vedic civilization, a descendant of a brahmana family should never be heavily punished. This was exemplified in Arjuna's treatment of Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama was the son of a great brahmana, Dronacharya, and in spite of his having committed the great offence of killing all the sleeping sons of the Pandavas, for which he was condemned even by Lord Krishna, Arjuna excused him by not killing him because he happened to be the son of a brahmana. The word brahma bandushu used here is significant. Brahma Bandushu means a person who is born of a brahmana father, but whose activities are not up to the standard of the brahmanas. Such a person is not a brahmana, but a Brahma Bandhu. Daksha proved himself to be a Brahma Bandhu. He was born of a great brahmana father, Lord Brahma, but his treatment of Lord Shiva was not exactly brahminical. Therefore, he admitted that he was not a perfect brahmana. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, however, are affectionate even to an imperfect brahmana. Lord Shiva punished Daksha, not as one does his enemy, rather. He punished Daksha just to bring him to his senses, so that he would know that he had done wrong. Daksha could understand this, and he acknowledged the great mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva towards the fallen brahmanas, including even himself. Although he was fallen, his vow was to execute the sacrifice as is the duty of brahmanas, and thus he began his prayers to Lord Shiva. Om Agyanatimiranda Surganamjana Salakaya Chachuru Indritam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadanti Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yatripa Tamaham Bande Chirum Tinatarinam. Okay, so brahmanas and fallen brahmanas. Samo tamastapa socham chantir ajvam eva cha jnanam vijnanam astignyam brahma karma svabhava jam. The qualifications of a person indicate their status. And the purpose of the human form of life is to come to the point of understanding one's spiritual identity. Separate from the material identity of the living entity. And Brahminical culture is dedicated to this understanding of existence, of life. Jnanam, vijnanam, astikyam. Astikyam means following the rules and regulations of a progressive life, a progressive existence. And progressive means tamasima jyotirgama, come out of ignorance and go towards the light. Come out of darkness, tamas, tamasi, ma, go away from the ignorance and come to the light. Jyoti. And the measure of a person's progress towards the light is how much they understand and act on the spiritual platform, which is really that's Brahminical culture. Now, the Vaishnava is considered to be better than that, because all of the activities of the Vaishnava are dedicated to immediately are dedicated to serving Krishna. So automatically all of the purposes of a brahmana are met by the proper behavior of a Vaishnava. Right. That's why Vaishnava is considered. Because and if we analyze or if we follow the guidelines for Vaishnava behavior, then we see that automatically, even if we're coming from an outcast or a mecha or a yavana, you know, even if a person is coming from the background of behavior and activities outside of Varnashram, which means Brahmana Chatya Vaishya Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi, then one transcends any position, any bodily identification, and one is very quickly and rapidly elevated to the spiritual platform. Brahma Bhuta Prasadatma Nasuchati Nakanchati. By following the process of bhakti, one is automatically elevated to the position of Brahman, understanding that we're not the body, that we're spiritual by nature. This is praktak savagamam dhamyam, the perfection of religion, because bhakti, devotional service, even in practice, elevates us to the point of understanding that we're not the body. This is the test, right? And of course that's the purpose of a brahmana, is to come to that point of spiritual realization. Aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Aham brahmasmi, not aham mameti, I and mine. And of course that's Daksha's problem. He was operating very much on a materialistic concept, based on his material position, very elevated. But even if one's elevated in the material world, that can be dangerous, as we see here, because Daksha felt that his material position, elevated as it was superior to Lord Shiva, who actually was spiritually more advanced than he. Right? He has a responsible position in the material affairs of the creation as a progenitor, as a prajapati. And so that's a significant, that's an important role. But Lord Shiva, by his qualities, if we look at the qualities of Lord Shiva, we can see that he's more advanced. He's very merciful. Right? He's very renounced. He's always absorbed in thoughts and in the service of the Lord, and especially, as Prabhupada mentioned previously, in this mood of elevating others, bringing others out of ignorance. The Brahminical class, in one sense, are concerned about their personal liberation. Of course, we should be concerned about our personal liberation, but more advanced than that is to see that along with our spiritual progress, others are also making advancement. Right? This is real sacrifice. And as Prabhupada, para upakara. This is the topmost activity. Giving others an opportunity to make spiritual progress, even if they don't want to. Right? This is a characteristic of an advanced devotee. He's not concerned about his own spiritual advancement, because he knows, or she knows, that'll come automatically. That comes automatically for a Vaishnava. But in one sense, a Vaishnava is incomplete if he is not working for the benefit of others, just working for their own personal salvation. Good, but still somewhat selfish. There are those who come to the temple and they pray to Radha Ballabha, "Oh Lord, you're the greatest, you're the most wonderful, please fulfill all of my desires. Right? That's pious. That's pious. There's nothing wrong with that. But more advanced is the devotee who realizes that the Lord is great and I'm his servant and I should do what he wants, not he should do what I want. Right? The devotee comes and prays, give me, give me, give me. He's just making the Lord his servant. Right? But that's not the right mood. Dasasmi, symptom of a person who's spiritually advanced, understands that they're a servant of God. Right? We're not the body. We should get to that level. And then if we're not the body, then what are we? Right? That's what the Aussies say. What are you? Right? What are you? Well, you're a spirit soul. Ahambrahmasmi. But what does that mean? What form does the spirit soul take? Right, we've got form. We can see we have form. So, what form do we take as a spirit identity, as a spirit individual, as a spirit person? What form do we take? That form manifests in a variety of stages, or in a number of stages. There's the impersonal, or just that realization, I'm not material. But in one sense, it's a negative conception. I'm not material. Okay, but then what are you? If you're not material, you're spiritual, so what does that mean? Satchit Ananda. And sat and chit means to know that you're not the body, that you're spiritual by nature, and spiritual by nature means you're a servant. Of course, there's the neutral aspect, that's the impersonal realization. But more advanced or more developed in consciousness is to understand that I have a form. Spiritual means form. Right? The material energy has form. Right? So that means the spiritual energy must have form. Right? Otherwise, where does the material energy get its form from? Where does form come from in the material world? You know, if only the material energy has form, that means it's superior to the spiritual. But we know that the form of the material world is a perverted reflection of the forms of the spiritual world. And so, you know, it is not enough to understand that your spirit without form, it's good, it's better, it's more than knowing, you know, that it's an understanding of the sat feature, that we're eternal, not this, you know, flickering, wavering, whimsical, you know, situation that we're in, which is always changing. No. Material world's very dissatisfying because we get what we want one day, and then the next day, gone. Right? And then what happened? I worked so hard to get what I wanted. I got what I wanted. I was happy for a moment, and then, boop, now I'm miserable again. Right? So, we're looking for permanent happiness. We're looking for permanent pleasure. That ananda, which exists in our original spiritual form. So the neutral position is good, but better than that is to understand that I'm a servant. That I have form, that I have characteristics, I have features, I have an identity. And that identity is not... part of the challenge of spiritual life is to appreciate our identity and our form. In the material creation, what's our identity? Or what are our desires? best not talked about. Okay? Right? So that's scary. Look at who I am. But then, okay, all right. Become pure in desire. Become pure-hearted. And that's scary too, because then we have to realize, hang on a second, I have responsibilities, I have an identity, I have a purpose. It means I've got to do stuff. Right? And that's challenging too. The material personality is challenging because it's so horrible. And the spiritual personality is challenging because I've got to do things. To realize my identity, I need to act and be and perform and behave, which is a challenge. It means responsibility. Human form brings with it a great deal of responsibility. And on the whole, from our material perspective, we just want to enjoy, which is just, let us just do what we like. Huh? And surrender means, okay, Krishna, I'm your servant, what do you want me to do? Huh? Then Krishna says, well, do this. He says, oh, I have to do that. You sure? That's what I want. I have to do that. Mm-hmm. So, the identification with Brahman, the spiritual spark, and beyond that, the spiritual identity that we have and the responsibilities that we inherit or that we have naturally, is a natural part of our identity to have responsibility. Who likes that idea? Raise your hands if you like the idea of responsibility. Okay. You're advanced. You're advanced, because most of us don't want the responsibility. I want spiritual life without responsibility. Right? If I can't have material life, then at least give me spiritual life, but not without having to do anything. So, and that's why there's fear attached to, you know, in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions there's fear attached to making advancement in spiritual life. Fear of facing our identity, our material identity, and realizing that we're fallen and having to wear the responsibility of all the reactions that we're getting. Right? That's fearful. I have to be responsible for what I've done. It's like, Hare Krishna. Huh? And then on top of that, when our spiritual identity is manifest or realized, then there are responsibilities that come with that. And so, you know, we wonder, can I do it? Can I do it? Just like Prabhupada, when he arrived in Boston and he prayed to Krishna, this is a horrible place. What did you bring me here for? What am I here for? Because Prabhupada knew what he was there for. Right? But even Prabhupada was saying, well, what am I here for? How am I going to do what Prabhupada knew he had to do? And he knew that even he would achieve it. You know, we have an indication that from what Prabhupada said, we know that Prabhupada had an understanding very early on in his life what he was going to do. And so by the time he arrived in Boston, he knew what he was there for and he knew what he was going to do. But at the same time, there's that unknown. Right? There's the unknown. We know what we're going to do, but we're not sure how it's going to manifest. Right? Just like Rasa knows that she's going to paint Sadbuj. She's already three quarters of the way there. But the challenge of an artist is, how am I going to get to where I need to be? And all the details and, you know, the details of performing one's service, or painting Lord Jagannath at the moment. All the details, got to get everything perfectly. The colour's got to be right, the lines, you know, when I was a kid, we had colouring in, you know, and you had to colour in between the lines, which means you have to be really careful. But I was just, you know, young, stupid boy. And I could never colour in between the lines. I used to see the girls that I'd sit next to in school, they're all colouring neatly in between the lines. And I'm thinking, how do you do that? Huh? Because I used to just, and I would smudge it all over the place. Never very neat or tidy. Huh? So, how do you do that? And our service, even life itself, is made up of taking care of lots of little details. Huh? I remember when I was a young Sankirtan devotee, collector mainly, and I didn't mind, well, I didn't particularly like collecting money, you know, asking people for money. You ever liked asking people for money? Why don't we like asking people for money? Most of the time they say no. Because Krishna says that's the nature of begging, right? But of course, sometimes people say yes. That's pretty far out. If you had a whole day of everybody saying no, and then, and this has happened to me more than once, you know, you spend all day walking around, knocking on door to door, and then at 6 o'clock at night, somebody say, yeah, come in, let's have a look at your paintings, and they buy $1,000 worth of paintings. So it's like, woo, woo-hoo! It's like selling a full set of books. You've slogged it out all day trying to sell, you know, a few small books, and then you meet somebody who says, yeah, I'll buy a set of books. So, Balaram, the temple president then, we used to have Sunday Sankirtan classes. And then Balaram started telling us all about the expenses of the temple and how much money we had to spend on this and that and the other thing. And I thought, well, hang on a second, life's hard enough already. Just collecting money. I don't want to know how it's been spent. Don't give me the details. Huh? And just like my father used to always say to me, when are you going to grow up? When are you going to realise what's actually going on around here? And so I noticed, you know, when I'm living at home, leave the lights on, you know, drink all the milk in the fridge, use as much sugar as you like, eat all the butter, right? But then when I started to pay my own bills, then, hey, turn off the light. Don't drink all the milk. You know, just started getting very tight. And basically grew up. But that's a challenge. That's a challenge. And especially for us as devotees, having to grow up and be aware of all of the responsibilities that we've got as a transcendentalist, as a Vaishnava. It's a growing up process. And there's a fear of that. We have a fear. Responsibility. I don't want that. What? Huh? I don't want to know about it. Leave me alone. So, Brahminical culture, but more importantly, Vaishnava culture, which automatically embraces the Brahminical culture, has with it a set of responsibilities, a set of behaviours. And one of the qualities of goodness is action, same as a person in the mode of passion, but action with detachment. The person in the mode of passion acts with attachment to the results and wants to enjoy the results. And what happens? What happens for us when we're in a mode of passion and we perform our activities hoping to enjoy them? What happens? What's the end result?
Attachment, disappointment, frustration.
Yeah, distress, basically. Mode of passion leads to distress. Because we get what we want, but then have a guess what happens? Well, we know what happens. It goes. But whereas a person in the mode of goodness knows that it goes. It comes and it goes. It's like the tide. Right? We know if you go and stand on the beach, the tide goes out, then it comes in again. Sometimes it's high, sometimes it's low. High, low tide. High, high tide. Right? So we know it's coming and going. The nature of the material world matraspasastu kuntaya sitosna sukadukutaha agamahapayano nityas tongues to tiksha. So person, and this is a qualification, even these are the qualifications that Lord Chaitanya recommends, right? Trinada pisa nityena tarore vasahishnu na amananena amanadena kitaniya sadahari. So tolerance, humility, patience, these are qualifications that we as Vaishnavas and Brahmanas as well cultivate. Of course, you know, we're coming into devotional service fully in the mode of passion. Come on, rah, rah. I'm going to be a pure devotee in about 5 weeks, or maybe a little bit longer than that, right? So we think, I'm going to do it, not realizing that actually Krishna is actually doing it. If there is anything to do, Krishna's the ultimate doer, and that he's purifying us, and we need to have faith in Krishna's looking after us. And when things go wrong as a devotee, we think, hey Krishna, what's going on here? How come something's going wrong? Why isn't everything perfect? I'm a devotee, huh? We're on the path of perfection, aren't we? Aren't we on the path of perfection? That's what we're told. Samyag hi vyavasito hi saha. We're on the path of perfection. But if we're on the path of the perfection, how come so much stuff's going wrong? Huh? Well, actually the path of perfection is designed in such a way so that we have to eventually realize that we're not the doer, that Krishna ultimately is the doer. And that even when things go wrong, that's for our benefit. Isn't it amazing? Right? So when something goes well, we say jai. Right? And when something goes wrong, we say jai. Right? Ouch. But we say jai. We have to. Right? This is our philosophy. That Krishna is trying to teach us lessons so that we are deeper and deeper and deeper connected with him and deeper connected with our real selves. That's a real challenge. That we have to face our self-realization means facing our material, you know, contaminated self, the false ego and the mind and all of its attachments, and come to the real ego of our spiritual identity, and then all the thoughts and the feelings and the emotions that come with that identity. Because there's, just as there's feelings and emotions in the material identity, there's also feelings and emotions and experiences and, as I say, responsibilities that come in the spiritual identity, both of which are a challenge for us. So Daksha was born of a Brahmana father, Lord Brahma, you know, arguably the best devotee, right? But despite that high birth and the qualifications that he acquired, many advanced symptoms of advancement, he was bewildered by the facility, the material facility that he had earned, and it covered his spiritual identity, such that he had committed offences to even the very elevated, the more elevated, even though Lord Shiva was his son-in-law, and usually the father-in-law is superior to the son-in-law. This is the general scheme of things. But in this particular case, he wasn't. So just because he was a son-in-law didn't mean that Lord Shiva should be treated in a fashion that you might treat any ordinary son-in-law. Huh? He's a special son-in-law. Not junior, actually, but spiritually more advanced. And so his treatment of Lord Shiva, or his misunderstanding of who Lord Shiva is, and his treatment of him was offensive. And so as a consequence, he had to suffer, get a reaction, right? But what was the reaction for? The reaction was to rectify his consciousness. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu don't give up on their devotees, and especially if there's some correction. Just like the parents. When Gopal and Haridev's an idea that when they misbehave, what happens? And your dad finds out, what happens? You don't know? You're kidding me. What happens when your dad finds out from mum that you've been misbehaving? Get scolded? Yeah. Dad has a chat with you, right? Mum has a chat too. Right? Yeah, they have a chat with you. And what do they tell you to do? Don't do it again. Yeah. And why do they do that? Yeah, they want you to behave properly. Huh? Now, just because your mum and dad are getting on your case, that doesn't mean they don't like you anymore. Right? Believe it or not. Huh? Mum and dad will get on your case. Hey, pull your socks up. Right? And that makes you a better person. It took me 40 years to work that out. Hopefully you can learn it sooner than later. Right? And so Krishna squeezes us sometimes, right? Or sometimes even hard. Oh, huh? Really hard. And so we think, I want to be a pure devotee. Why me? Huh? But you're not a pure devotee. What about this? What about that? What about the other thing? It's like, okay. And so we can't be proud. We have to be, Krishna will, by squeezing us a little bit, he makes us realize that we're proud and that we are attached to things of the material world that won't satisfy us, won't make us happy. We might get what we think is going to make us happy, but we should know, at least theoretically, we'll know from experience that those things, we get them, but then they don't make us happy. They just make us miserable. And especially for the devotees, the challenge is, okay, I've got my life to go through and I have things to achieve, but at the same time, I know that they're not going to be satisfied. So how do I maintain my enthusiasm for doing things that I know ultimately will make me unhappy? And yet I still have to do it according to my karma and according to my position, my dharma, if you like. Huh? From the material perspective and from the spiritual perspective, there are things that we do that we know from our philosophy, ultimately it isn't going to work out. Huh? But I need to do that for my purification, just like getting married, for example. Most men and women need to get married. But in ISKCON, we know, in our philosophy, we read in the books, oh, you get married, you're going to suffer. Isn't that right? How discouraging. We think, when we get married, then everybody says, oh, Jai, that's wonderful. Right? Yeah, he's thinking like that. For a little while. You know what I said? We've had the Punjabi brides have come. Now we're starting to get the Punjabi babies. And now the Mauritian brides are coming. And it will be just a matter of time and we'll have the Mauritian babies as well. So, you know, everybody's laughing at a wedding, right? Everybody's laughing, except for the bride and the groom. They're really serious. But why is everybody laughing? Huh? Why are they laughing? Because they know it's a joke. But we have to do it. You have to do it. It's not that, you know, we can, you know, because if we don't follow our natural tendencies, if we don't follow them, then, as Krishna says, what will repression accomplish? Huh? Young men and young women, if they don't get married, they become depressed, or they get ill, or so many things happen. Right? There are some people, some of us, will be naturally renounced, and that's fine too. We encourage that. Huh? But on the whole, for example, we, most of us, get married, and then we have the responsibilities of married life. But as, you know, intellectually we might understand, this is going to be trouble. Right? But still we have to go through that, because that's for our purification. You know, all the different samskaras are designed for us to progress through life and all the different stages of existence ultimately for our purification. So that's Brahminical culture. Also Vaishnav culture. When we do these things for Krishna's pleasure, the ultimate result of all of that is that we become self-realized. Even some of these activities that appear to be mundane and material, they're not. Even Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sex, life, according to religious principles, that I am. Right? That's why Prajapati Daksha is, and he's, you know, the proper mentality for the Prajapatis is to perform that sacrifice or that activity for the benefit of Lord Vishnu. That's the role of the demigods. Huh? So, but there are challenges, obviously, in all stages of existence. But those challenges are there for us to realize our material foibles, failings, but also to rise to the spiritual platform. And you know, the spiritual platform, if that's the most valuable thing that you can achieve, you have to expect that it requires some effort to get it. Right? And it's not all just going to fall out of this. You know, I used to have this notion that one day I'd just be walking down the street and then all of a sudden there'd be this ray, this beam of Brahman would zap me, you know, and then all of a sudden I'd be self-realized. Right? And then, you know, just, you know, that kind of happy bunny brahmana, self-realized kind of person. But actually it's not like that. Even if you want to achieve anything in the material world, you have to work hard. So if spiritual existence and spiritual realization is the pinnacle of existence, then you have to expect that you've got to do something to get it. It's not going to happen just walking down the street and there's a ray of Vishnu comes out of the clouds and zaps you and then you're automatically self-realized. It's not going to happen like that. Lord Brahma, what does Lord Brahma say? Determination. Well, Rupa Goswami says enthusiasm, determination, patience, theistic conduct, right? Tat tat karma pravartanat. Tat tat karma means pious activity, pious devotional activity. And steadiness, patience, despite the difficulties and despite the setbacks, which ultimately give us some insight as to the nature of the material world, insight into our identity, insight into our weaknesses, so that we can become strong. So effort is required. You know, when your alarm clock goes off, if you hear it, My watch has got a vibrator, you know, set for 10 to 4, 3:50. And some mornings I don't even hear it. Most mornings, actually. I wake up and I'm not sure. Well, it's not my watch that woke me up. It goes off at 10 to 4 and at 4 o'clock every day. And most days I don't hear it, actually. But when I do wake up, it's kind of like, in many respects, getting out of bed is the hardest thing we do all day. Huh? And yet in this day and age, what's the first thing you do when you wake up? Reach for your iPhone, check out Facebook. Reach for the iPhone, look at the news or something silly. But no, we have to get up and then bow down and offer our respects to Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual masters. And then dedicate the whole of the day to serving them. That's what we're supposed to do. We get up and we pay our obeisances and say, Krishna, I'm yours. What do you want me to do? No wonder we cop it, because we're asking for it right from the word go. Krishna, what do you want me to do? Okay, well, we've got a big list here for you. And it all culminates ultimately in helping others. That's the pinnacle of Vaishnava achievement. That particular characteristic we see in Srimati Radharani, because she's the perfect servant of Krishna. And she's thinking about, let me bring others to Krishna for their pleasure and for his pleasure. Selfless, in other words. And when we wake up in the morning, then we automatically desire austerity and struggle and challenge. It's challenging. Wake up in the morning, we say, Krishna, I'm yours, what do you want me to do? And of course Lord Chaitanya says, well, you're in the Sankirtan movement, so your duty is to go and help others. Then automatically we're asking for trouble, right? Automatically. So, you know, if you're wondering why life is difficult, you ask for it. We ask for it. But ultimately it's for our spiritual benefit. When you put yourself out to help others, then they'll become obliged. Krishna will become obliged. We'll win Krishna's heart and we'll win the hearts of others. And in the progress make spiritual advancement and be fully satisfied. You know, one of the devotees was saying to a Chintarupa, or she mentioned to me yesterday, one of the devotees is cooking a Sunday feast, and he said, you know, cooking for others, it's really, cooking for Krishna and cooking for others is really a special thing to do. Huh? There's a real pleasure in doing that service for others. Isn't it? Mamaha? It's hard work, right? Hard work cooking for others. But there's actually no greater pleasure than feeding others. No higher pleasure, is there? When they say, oh, that was good, give me some more. Oh, okay. I used to love cooking. Before I became a devotee, I used to cook, and I used to get great pleasure out of feeding my friends when they would come around. As even before I was a devotee. Because I used to cook and chant Hare Krishna. And that, in those days, the first book I bought was the Hare Krishna cookbook. And I read in that book that when you cook, you have to meditate on Krishna. So when I used to cook, I used to chant Hare Krishna in my head. Huh? And I used to like, so I guess in one sense it was kind of prasadam, kind of. But I used to enjoy it. My friends would come around and then I'd be cooking.
New messages received from Pradapana Dasa. Messages HBA. Please text me your arrival details.
I put this on silent. I put it on silent, but obviously it didn't work. It is on silent. Why is it? Now it reads my text messages. As you just noticed. So, serving others and putting yourself out to assist others is actually, you know, it's pleasing to Krishna and it's also satisfying to ourselves. We think, oh no, I've got to cook the offering. Oh no, I've got to cook the Sunday feast. Oh, ow. What? Any Sunday feast cooks here? No, unfortunate. Well, I remember. You know, here's what I used to. I used to be scheduled to do the kitchen cleanup, and it would take 3 hours. You start at 6 o'clock, and you finish at 9, and it was hard work. Anybody done the kitchen cleanup here? Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? Huh? It's fun. But what I found was it was always a challenge. It was like climbing Mount Everest. It was like, oh no, this is almost impossible. I can't do it. Right? This is my experience with many services, especially book distribution or going out doing a collection. You get to stand on the street and you think, oh no, I can't do it. It's too hard. Right? But then you go, because this is the mind. The mind is just saying, you know, don't do it, you can't do it, it's horrible, what are they making you do this for? Right? This is not really Krishna consciousness. This is just some plan to give me a hard time. Right? So this is the mind. Right? But then you get into it, and then all of a sudden you discover, washing the pots or whatever, you're completely gone off of the material platform. And you're completely in a different world. Just the same with Sankirtan. Go out on Sankirtan and you think, oh no, look at all these karmis, this is horrible, I can't do it. What are they going to think of me? They're all laughing at me. And I'm not very advanced and so many things. But then when you start chanting Hare Krishna, you get absorbed in the kirtan, and all of a sudden you're in Vaikuntha, you couldn't care less about what anybody thinks. Huh? You're just having such a good time. Because what we do is actually not material. What we do is purely spiritual. Even if it's cleaning the courtyard or sweeping the floors or cleaning the kitchen or whatever. It is not material activity. And when we get into the mood and the spirit of devotional service, and especially pure devotional service, which is done purely for the pleasure of Krishna, then we are automatically elevated to the spiritual platform and are intimately connected with Krishna. We forget that. We forget it sometimes. Until we get into it and then we realize, whoa, this is far out. This is why I joined the Hare Krishna movement, right? Because even the most mundane activity performed with the right consciousness elevates a person immediately to the spiritual platform. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochatina Kanchati. So no lamentation, no expectation, just do it for Krishna's pleasure and then you'll be happy, right? And that's the highest level. It's the beginning of spiritual experience, and that's the Anandam Buddhi Vajanam Prati Punam Punam Ritas Vajanam. That's the nectar that we're looking for. We tend to look for it in material activities, right? But actually, the highest experience and the highest transcendental pleasure is experienced when we perform our devotional service, whatever it is, with the right mentality, with the pure mentality of doing it for Krishna's pleasure or doing it for the benefit of others. Then automatically we benefit. We benefit automatically by the process of devotional service. When we perform it with the right mood of sacrifice, And we just forget that actually it is a sacrifice. Because we look at the what we think we have to give up without realizing that giving those material things up, we actually inherit the best of everything, which is the spiritual consciousness. And we see that in Prabhupada. Prabhupada underwent so many austerities and so many difficulties, knowing that, you know, it's all transitory, but with the goal of pleasing Krishna and pleasing his spiritual master, and in that mood was able to, you know, do the impossible effectively. Right? And Prabhupada said, you know, I take risks. I took everything I did was a risk. Right? When Prabhupada went to America, what a risk. When he took on 26 Second Avenue, he didn't have any money. When Prabhupada bought the Fisher Mansion, they wanted $350,000 for it. Prabhupada's first opening line was, "We're doing welfare work for the benefit of everybody. You should give us this property." So that was Prabhupada's opening line. Right. So then they said, "Well, we can't do that." So then Prabhupada said, "All right. Well, what's your asking price?" And then they said $350,000. So Prabhupada then said, "All right, we'll give you $300,000 cash." Right? And Prabhupada had no money. He didn't have any money. But he knew he had two wealthy disciples. Right? So, and Ambarish didn't like the mansion. You know, when Prabhupada, they walked around and Prabhupada was admiring this and that and so many things. And then he asked Ambarish, "What do you think?" And he said, "I think it's Maya, Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "Well, yeah, no, so this is all of this workmanship and everything, we can use it all for Krishna." Right? So he asked Lekha Shravanti, and she said, "I can give $120,000 from her inheritance." And Ambarish said, "Yeah, I can give the rest." Prabhupada said, "What do you think? Can we do it?" They said, "Yes, Prabhupada, we can do it." So Prabhupada, you know, in one day he said, "Just see, look, I didn't have any money in the morning and now I've got this property." So Prabhupada took risks. And it wasn't, never easy, actually, never easy. But Prabhupada said, "Just see how wonderful Krishna is." You know, when Prabhupada went to India and he had this conception, Mayapur temple, Vrindavan temple, Juhu temple, and Prabhupada was telling all the devotees, they couldn't believe it. They were living in, you know, and Juhu, they're living in a mosquito-ridden, rat-infested, snake, you know, jungle. And they were always getting malaria and dysentery and getting sick all the time. Prabhupada's talking about a grand palace. Harada Rasa Bihari, and they're thinking, "Oh God, you know, can we go back to the place that they were staying in Mumbai?" They want to go back to the city. They felt like they were out in the sticks, in the jungle, and they were always getting sick. Prabhupada's talking about this fabulous palace and a hotel and this, that and the other thing. And they're all getting sick and thinking, "Can't we go back to downtown Mumbai where we can be healthy?" They couldn't see it. But now if you go to Juhu, anybody here been to Juhu? Go to Juhu and what do you see? You see Prabhupada's vision. And you have a very comfortable bed to sleep in.
Heaven on earth.
Huh?
Heaven on earth.
Heaven on earth. Yeah, it's an amazing place. So the devotees went through great austerity. Actually, you know, even this temple came about as a lot of austerities performed by the Sankirtan devotees of the 70s. We come here now and we just think, "Oh God, all of this, we've got to clean all of this, right? We've got to maintain all this place." What do they do that for? Huh? Of course, people come to the temple and appreciate They see Radha Balabha, they see Gaur-Nitai, they see Lord Jagannath. They take prasadam, right? And they appreciate how wonderful, we appreciate how wonderful it is, right? Sometimes not appreciating the amount of work that goes into, you know, just having all of this. So Prabhupada took risks, underwent austerities, but in the end appreciates how wonderful, and we can too, how wonderful Krishna is, that he takes away all of our material attachments and he gives us spiritual attachments, spiritual achievements and spiritual challenges, and ultimately happy, you know, we pursue Krishna consciousness with great enthusiasm, and what happens? We become happy. Right? Otherwise, why do we do it? Why do we serve Krishna and undergo austerities? We wouldn't do anything else. Huh? If you were given an option, like Giriraj Maharaj, his father offered him $1 million to leave the Hare Krishna movement. Huh? If your dad gave you $1 million, would you leave the Hare Krishna movement? What do you think? I don't know. You think about it, maybe? What would you do? If somebody gave you, here's $1 million, I want you to leave the Hare Krishna movement, what would you say? You'd take it from them, but they'd cheat them, huh? We like it. We like to perform austerities and serve Krishna and preach, even despite the challenges, because it makes us happier than anything else. All right, I'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? What do you reckon, Devesh? Got a realization to share with us? No? I noticed you got some nice earrings there, Kirtan. Huh? When did they go in? Last year. That's just a few days away. A few days ago. Is there any reason for that? Looks good, huh? Huh? You look pretty cool. What's the reason for that? Yeah, what for?
When they are small, they wear, but I think there is a custom in South India.
I know. I was just wondering what it's for.
Sharpens the brain.
Okay, he's already pretty sharp, isn't he? Gets more sharp. That's what I missed out on, I guess, in childhood. I didn't pierce my ears. When are you getting your ears pierced? Or you're already pretty sharp? Already, huh?
Yeah, I don't have
the... Okay, they only have to do it once. Yeah. That's why he's so sharp. He's already had his done. Yeah.
In other side, he also says those who worship devotees of my devotees, they are marrying devotees.
Yeah.
And being Lord Shiva is a devotee, and how see Lord Krishna, the devotee of Lord Shiva?
Well, the thing is that It's foolish if one thinks that the demigods are on an equal or superior platform to Lord Vishnu, right? But worshipping the demigods, acknowledging their relationship with Krishna, is okay, because they're actually devotees. And even it's mentioned that the spiritual master is the summum bonum of all of the demigods. Right. So when we worship the Srila Prabhupada, we're actually, he's a representative, he's the representative of the demigods, in that he's the dedicated servant of Krishna. And the demigods are also dedicated servants of Krishna. So we can worship the demigods in consideration of and in appreciation of their service attitude to Krishna, right? But if we're worshipping the demigods thinking they're superior and they can, you know, provide all of our material desires, then that's foolishness, right? So there's no harm in fact, there's benefits in worshipping the demigods, but primarily we appreciate and respect and honour the demigods because they're the confidential servitors of God. That's why they're called demigods. They're like God because they're dedicated servants of God. Just like Srila Prabhupada was honoured and respected because he was on such a high transcendental platform, and he's on that platform because of his service to God. Right. So we become godly when we serve God. We become like, and so the devotees are like demigods, right? And that's why we worship the devotees, because they're elevated. We're in awe of the devotees' service and service attitude and dedication, and so we want to be like them. Right? I remember meeting some of the devotees on the street, and I mean, one of them chewing gum, and I think, hey, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to chew chewing gum. I thought all of the devotees were demigods. They walked about 6 inches off the ground. Huh? And I thought, wow, look at all these blissful devotees serving Krishna together. Huh? I was in awe. Then I joined a temple. Anything else?
The Buddha said that anything done in a more passionate and psychometric frustration, distress.
Distress. Yeah.
And distress itself is like, it's very frustrating.
Distress itself is?
Frustrating.
Yeah.
You have to work, you have to earn money, you have to pay your bills, you have to get a house and mortgage and everything.
Fun, huh?
Sorry?
Fun. Fun. You're having fun.
So
you're lucky you got a wealthy dad. And your wife's lucky too. It's a challenge. Yes, it's a challenge, because we know the futility of material existence, but what we have to do is convert that activity into spiritual existence. And it is done by detachment. And by offering, and detachment comes through offering a result to Krishna. We know we have to do it, but we know if we do that in material consciousness, it's ultimately going to be frustrating. But if we do it in a detached way, with a desire to please Krishna, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure, right? And so therefore it's the mentality that we have to change in doing it. We don't necessarily change the activity, it's the mentality in which we do it, right? That's when we start to make spiritual advancement.
Okay.
So we wait, oh, you know, this is going to be frustrating. Why do I have to do it? You have to do it because that's purifying. That sacrifice, where the results of the activities are offered ultimately to Krishna, that's the reason why we do it. And so in one sense, it's immaterial what we do. What's more important is how we do it, the mood and the meditation in which we do it. So we think, oh no, the kitchen cleaner. Oh, yeah. What have I got to do that for? Why can't somebody else do it? Oh, I'm not well. I'm not feeling well. Can you get somebody else to do the kitchen clean up? You notice that? You might have. Because we're looking at it from the material point of view. But if we look at it from the spiritual point of view and understand and appreciate that the challenge is ultimately, the major challenge is rectify the meditation, the consciousness of doing something, then when we do it for Krishna, it ultimately, it's for our spiritual benefit. And we are, this is why Lord Brahma says, you know, is it Lord Brahma? That crossing over the material, working in the material world is like crossing the Atlantic Ocean in a storm, right? It's almost impossible. But if we can remember Krishna and do it in the right, then that all of those difficulties shrink to the water that's contained in a footprint of a calf, right? So easily overcome. So it's mentality that needs to change. Even in doing things that we know ultimately might cause us some difficulty or some discomfort, some austerity. But it is said, Prabhupada says, you know, the wealth of the brahmanas is in austerity. Right? But again, not just austerity for austerity's sake, because when you do that, you'll again be frustrated, but the austerity is performed in a mood of rendering this, making an offering to Krishna. And then, you know, you can do amazing things. Then you look back and you think, wow, how did I do that? Huh? I used to think, how are we going to build this kitchen? And I always try to work it out. It's impossible, I can't do that. And then we just chanted Hare Krishna, and when the next opportunity came, we took it, and gradually, and then all of a sudden there's a kitchen there. And I think, how did I do that? Well, actually, I didn't do anything. Well, not very much as far as building the kitchen. Somebody else did it. No? Somebody else gave us the money. I didn't have the money, but they gave us the money. Right? So when you chant Hare Krishna, amazing things will happen. And you'll do things that you didn't even think you could do. Huh? Just have to have some faith in Krishna and keep plugging away, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you'll have a family, you'll have a house, the mortgage will be paid off, and then you'll be looking for some other adventure. Right? You'll be preaching. Right? Yeah, I will. It's easy to get on a mental platform. Right? When we see things and all the complications, we go, oh, too hard, I can't do that. But then we think, okay, Krishna, I'm doing this. I'll take a little bit of risk for your pleasure, and with the help of the devotees and by chanting Hare Krishna, then we'll see what happens. What do you think, Mamahan? What's the next challenge? Rainbow serpent, right? How are you going to do it? With a little help from Krishna and my friends, we'll get it done. Right? Okay. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.